Today on the show, I want to talk about burnout. Burnout is something that's come up so far for a lot of my guests, and it's something that's obviously been present in my life as well. What is it exactly? Well, it can look like a lot of things. For some people, it's a mental anguish. Maybe it's like you're always thinking about work and what am I doing at work. For other people, it's physical, and the symptoms can range from nausea to fatigue, and it can look like a lot of other illnesses, which is why it can be hard to recognize when it's happening to you. See, burnout is something that hits everybody differently, and if we're not careful, it'll hit all of us. And I think it seems to come when we're a little out of touch with ourselves, when we're out of touch with our center, our values. And I know this was true of my special guest today. So she's going to come on and tell her story about recognizing burnout, but also the story of how she took this opportunity to pause and take a break from some of the things that were causing her this kind of stress, and actually use that pause to create a life that was more in tune with who she is at her core, the kind of person she wants to be moving forward. It's a story and a journey that I admire because it's something I'm trying to do myself. Then again, I'm a little biased, but we'll get into all that later. For now, sit back and let's listen to another exciting story on Choose Your Own Adventure. Joining me on the show today is a very special guest. They're all special, but my guest today is particularly special, in part because she's the first person I've interviewed face-to-face since I started the show. That's exciting.
Is that why I'm special?
In part, and also in part because we share our lives together. Alyssa is not only my special guest, but she's also my wife, so that's exciting.
It is exciting.
I have interviewed you probably a number of times in our day-to-day life, and sometimes that is probably not very fun for you, but all the times it's very helpful for me. Mm-hmm. So she's great at getting people to kind of sort through their own thoughts and ideas, which is part of why I wanted to bring you on the show. So here you are. Welcome.
Here I am. Thank you. Thanks for having me on your show.
It's good to have you.
I haven't heard any of your podcasts yet, but I know you've been doing them and I'm excited to hear them.
You've probably heard them like being recorded,
yeah,
but not heard them as finished products.
Right, exactly. And even like I've heard you doing them, but like I wasn't like listening, like eavesdropping necessarily.
Yeah, that's funny. I guess I didn't think about that.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm listening to a podcast or watching something or napping, right. Or
it's tight quarters, it's shared space. Everybody's working.
Sometimes
I'm
not even there.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, vaccinated. I go out and live my life.
Yeah, you're out, you're doing things, you got stuff to do and people to see. And so somehow or other, this all leads us to the start of our journey together today. And, you know, throughout the season, we've been talking about people at a crossroads, and I know that you faced forks in many of the roads of your life. So I was wondering if you could tell us about a particular crossroads, kind of set the scene, what was on the table, and what were you thinking about?
Yeah, so when you initially came to me with this idea about talking about a crossroads in my life, you had given me some different options, different questions to think about. And the one that came up for me and that continues to come up for me is this sort of turning point in my life about 2 years ago, fall of 2019. I was working for a nonprofit at the time, doing work that generally I liked doing, working with students who I loved, working with a great team for the most part, but feeling like super burnt out and undervalued in the position I was in. And it felt like it was kind of a recurring pattern. I've worked a lot in nonprofits and educational spaces and those type of like working with humans, human services type of jobs can be really draining and really taxing. And so this one felt particularly different because I thought I was in a place where I was finally like doing work that I loved. I felt good at it. I felt like I was a leader in that space, but it got to a point where there was just like, I was carrying so much and you can only carry so much before you kind of collapse, you know? So I had planned to walk away from that job, without anything else lined up. And ended up actually towards the end of my time there, being offered a different position in an educational setting, but like not in a direct service or like direct contact kind of role. And I was like, okay, maybe this is like a different type of work and maybe this is better for me to kind of take a step back from direct service stuff. And I was there for about a month, maybe 2 months, and it wasn't anything necessarily wrong with the, you know, with the people I worked with or the type of work or the environment. It was just sort of, I had so much weighing on me that it was still, even though I had walked away from some of the things that were weighing on me, it was still, my mind, my body was still kind of processing and still kind of recovering. And, you know, I was dealing with anxiety and depression and all of that didn't go away when I left my job. And I thought that my job was sort of like the catalyst for those feelings. But they followed me into this new job. And so I was like, okay, well, this is clearly not just a job thing. There's like some stuff in my life that isn't working that I maybe haven't been paying attention to. And so I decided to leave that job and kind of embark on this journey into the unknown, you know? All I knew was that I wanted to be well. I wanted to be mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually healthy again. And so it was scary because I come from a background that really values stability and financial stability. And so it was hard to kind of walk away from that without a plan or without like a roadmap. And it's something that is still being developed even 2 years later. I'm in a different place now, but you know.
So when all of this first starts to bubble up to the surface, you kind of just transition from one job to another, right? Mm-hmm. Your role at the first nonprofit, mm-hmm. How could you define that?
Yeah, so I was working as an advisor for first-generation college students in a specific community in the Bay Area. And so I had, you know, 60 to 70 students that I was working with at any given time. And I kind of worked one-on-one providing individualized support with different needs around, you know, anything from financial aid to academic success to personal wellness. Sometimes just there as like a just emotional support, just to listen. So that was kind of the majority of my work. I was also doing programming for the high school students and, you know, summer programs and things like that. But the majority of my work was supporting my students who were in college already.
So your mind and your heart energy was on some level split up between 60 to 70 college students all over California and maybe a few other places, right? So it's pretty easy to see how a person just from that alone could get burnt out. Like, that's a lot of people to care for.
Totally. I mean, and believe it or not, like, yes, it's a lot of students. And yes, I think it's difficult when, like, sometimes, how do I say this? Like, not everyone is ready to receive the support that you're offering, which is fine. Like, you know, meeting people where they're at. Mm-hmm. But I think where the pressure and the tension came from was like, I was working with these students every day. And some of the challenges and the needs that I saw weren't necessarily aligned with what was being expected of me in my role, and sort of like the outcomes and the measure of success on the organizational standpoint, you know? So,
right. I imagine that's true for a lot of folks listening who like work at nonprofits is your boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. Your vision of success doesn't always match, you know, higher ups.
Totally. And like, I don't want to, you know, badmouth the organization. I think it's an issue with a lot of nonprofits, like you said, and schools and,
yes. So you quit one job at the first nonprofit, you move to a new job that seems like it might be a better fit, but pretty quickly you realize that's not the case. Mm-hmm. And so you leave there as well, not knowing necessarily where you're going to go, but you know that leaving was the right move. So let me ask you this. How did you know that leaving was the right move?
That's a good question. I think when I realized that it wasn't, that the job wasn't necessarily the problem, or it wasn't the only problem. I think for me, it wasn't just about leaving a job or leaving a place of employment. It was also about just taking time and taking space for myself and to really prioritize my well-being. And not only that, but even just like reimagining what my work life, you know, personal life, spiritual life, etc., could look like. I think for a long time, I had really prioritized work as like the top priority. And I didn't want that to be like my whole life anymore, you know?
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of directions we could go from here. That's interesting though, because I think a lot of people prioritize work subconsciously. Mm-hmm. What does it look like to not prioritize work?
For me, it looks like making work work for you. It's like work is a part of my day. It's something that I do, but it's not, I guess it's like creating a life where work can, and figuring out where work fits into it, rather than like getting a job and figuring out where your life fits into that job. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah, definitely. Like this thing serves me. I don't serve this thing.
Right. And you can still, I think like it, sometimes I feel like there's sort of, we only see two versions of what it means to work. One of them is like, you know, you're super like dedicated to your job and like you're a quote unquote good employee and a team player and all that stuff. And the other side is like, well, I'm just here to get paid. And I think, you know, if they work for you, like both of those are valid, honestly. Like, do the work you're here to get paid to do seems fair. It's an even exchange.
Sure.
For me, I think like I need to, when you think about how much time we spend in a working day, you know, generally 40 hours a week, or more or less, I want to be spending that time doing something that feels meaningful and that fills me up, you know, so that I can still have space in my life for other things that fill me up, for my relationships and for rest and for creativity and things like that. So I guess for me, it's like seeing work as something that just kind of fits into your life rather than something that consumes it, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is tough because it's a decision I've wrestled with a lot too. Sort of like balancing the place of work in our life. I think the part that I always get stuck on is this. Everybody has to work, right? And if we have to spend 40 hours or whatever, we want it to mean something. I mean, people like you and me value meaningful work. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that is the meaningful work is usually really taxing, like emotionally and sometimes in other ways. Mm-hmm. So how do you strike a balance? Or maybe like in your own journey, how did you try to strike that balance?
Yeah. Well, I think fundamentally for me, it came down to like reacquainting myself with myself. Nice. I had to really kind of like strip down the layers and get back to like, who am I at my core? What are my strengths? And not even like in a corporate way, like, oh, my strengths yeah. are, you know, dependability or whatever, mm-hmm. but like really coming down to like, who am I? What do I value? What am I, what is my purpose? Which is kind of a big word. But at least starting to explore those things so that the work that I'm pursuing is not work that I'm doing because I feel like I should be doing it or because I feel like it's what I'm supposed to do or whatever, that it's more aligned with who I am. And I will say like there is some privilege in what I've been able to do the past 2 years.
Yeah.
I understand that not everyone can just like up and leave their jobs and like go soul searching for, you know, a year or so. But I think there are things that people can do to start making those small changes and like either start preparing for a different path in life or creating changes in the way that you currently live your life so that it feels more aligned and balanced with who you are. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, it kind of depends on each person. But for me, it really started with getting back to coming home to myself.
That's nice.
And starting from there.
Yeah, sort of like figuring out the who am I piece, because I've heard this said in other ways, but like if you kind of know who you are, then the what you do with your life, your actions kind of flow from that. Mm-hmm. And so everything feels more harmonized because it started from a place that's more authentic.
Yeah. And I also, I guess I want to be clear about like, I don't think there's any shame in doing pretty much any kind of work that people do. You know, I don't think that one, I don't think the work that you do has to be like your passion in life. And I don't think that the work that you do has to be, you know, prestigious or whatever. I think that's kind of the point, right? It's like you said, because of the way society is set up and because of some of the systems at play, like, we all have to work to some capacity. The point is not to make your whole life about work, and figuring out how that works into your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there's a lot of conversation about work in a very, you know, big, lofty, philosophical way, which I hope will be helpful. I mean, it is for me, because these are important things to consider. What I want to know is, so you had made the decision to leave, you know, 9-to-5 work behind for a little while. You said at this point, which is almost roughly 2 years later, you're in a place that feels a little more defined. What were some of the things that happened in between to help you, I don't know, get back on track, or that you kind of felt like, okay, this is more me living the life I want to live? Does
sure.
that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not the best question I've ever asked.
I mean, a lot has happened since then. It's been almost 2 years.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. I think the first step for me was like, I needed to like rest. Like there were definitely like at least a few weeks where I just like didn't do anything. Like my body was just exhausted. And so at the time I had been in therapy even before I had left my job, and I actually, that December of 2019, I had actually started taking medications for anxiety and depression, which was like a big decision in itself for me. I'd never taken any type of anti-anxiety, antidepressant type medication. But I will say like getting that professional mental health support was very helpful in like a foundational way. So that was really helpful and important. I think the other thing I did was I worked with a personal coach to help me do some of that inner work that I wanted to do around reacquainting myself with myself, and kind of getting more clarity about the type of work I wanted to be doing, but also the type of life I wanted to be living. I was talking to people in my life. You know, I found that when I was making this decision, even just like to take a break from work, I didn't really know anyone who was doing that. But one, I found that people were really supportive. You were really supportive. And I've learned, you know, through other friends who connected me to people, that I wasn't the only one doing this. And it was so crazy because even in just a small group of friends, like, you know, I had one friend who connected me to like two or three different people who were also doing this, like, I need a break. I need to, you know, realign what I'm doing. And I want to kind of switch gears or switch paths or whatever. And, you know, that was really affirming too. Like, I think it's something that we don't see as an option. And I think it's really scary because of that. But there are people doing it. And I think now, because of the pandemic and, you know, things are changing, and I think even more people are kind of being more discerning about work because no one wants to be like exploited and, you know, burnt out anymore. People are tired.
So let's normalize taking a year off. That's what you need to do.
Yeah. And I think like working with what you have, like, I think I was in a very fortunate situation where I had money saved, where I felt like financially I could afford to take a break. I had you, a partner who was willing to, who was willing to help, you know, support this gap year, you know? But I think, you know, it's using what you have. Like, I know someone who moved back home so that she could take time to,
reset.
Yeah.
Realign.
Yeah.
Save
yeah.
Some money.
Yeah. Pretty much. Without sort of that burden of like rent and things like that, yeah. And helping out around the house in different ways, you know? I think one of the main deterrents for people to not do this is like financial stability and finances. And I think that was an important factor for me. And obviously, like, you know, that's why we work because, you know, maybe there's other reasons, but I think for a lot of people, it's because you need to, in order to pay your rent, in order to take care of your kids, in order to, you know, have access to healthcare. Like, there's a lot of reasons why people, there are a lot of good reasons why people wouldn't just like walk away with, you know, nothing else lined up.
Yeah.
I think for me, in my situation specifically, there was also a risk in like staying put with the path that I was on. And for me, that risk was greater than the risk of like, you know, in terms of where I was financially at that time, the risk of like losing a couple months to a year salary was worth it. because the price I was paying for like that financial stability was depression, anxiety, burnout. You know, it just wasn't worth it to me at a certain point. And so realizing that when we're talking about risk, like, there's always risk in the decisions that we make. And so it's kind of weighing like which one, where's there more risk, you know? Cause sometimes the obvious risk is like, if I lose my job, I lose my paycheck.
Right.
But there's also sort of that inherent risk of like, well, if you continue working and you're miserable or you're tired or you're, you know, even just like people commuting, like there were times where I was like falling asleep driving home from work. Yeah. Like,
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah.
Makes me so sad.
Yeah. So, you know, like there's just, you know, health wise in all sense of the word, you know, I didn't feel like I was showing up, you know, how I wanted to in my life for myself and for other people. So, and to a point, like not even for my students, like I couldn't I didn't even have the energy to show up for them. And like, that was where I was.
That was the job in the first place.
Yeah. So anyways, I guess all this by way of saying is you really have to assess what you need and be responsive to that, you know?
Well, I really like you framing it as sort of the choice between risks, and the risks here is losing money or losing myself, maybe. I mean, I have thought of it as, you know, I owe the people in my life my hard work. I owe really you and our cat. I owe you some level of like financial stability. But there's also the other piece of it that's intangible. Like, I owe you guys, you know, my love and my enthusiasm and all those little things that make me me. And I know that when we're not at our best because of whatever it is, we can't give that. So on some level, you know, I always frame it to myself as like, well, if I don't do, you know, if I go right back into the next job that I don't love, I'll go crazy. And that's not fair because it's really dramatic. But I have to put it in those terms because it's like, yeah, that's a big decision. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. I think, yes. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's how we, I know for me, like, that's how I was kind of repeating the same patterns. Like, I was on autopilot, like, you know, this job is finished, or, you know, grad school's finished or whatever, and I'm just going to move into the next thing and just keep moving into the next thing without really thinking about it or, you know, intentionally making that decision. It was just sort of like, this feels consistent with what I've been doing, and that's been working out fine enough until it wasn't, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes that's how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, some things that are right for you in one moment aren't necessarily right for you years later.
Forever. Yeah. I want to talk about any moments of affirmation or doubt that you might have come across in this process. Did you recognize those, and how did you face them?
Yes, to both. I think it's definitely been a roller coaster. And that being said, I still think it was the right decision for me. I think doubt has come up and continues to come up, and sometimes it's hard to stay focused on my own vision and my own path that I'm creating when it feels like the rest of the world is kind of moving in the opposite direction. You know, when I'm, it's hard when you're not seeing like immediate results. It's hard when you're not necessarily connected to a lot of people who are doing similar kinds of things. And so, yeah, there's definitely times where it feels like, it feels really tempting to like go back to that 9-to-5. And then I kind of have to remind myself, like, you know, this is just because that's like the easy thing to do, or like the familiar, I shouldn't say easy, the familiar thing to do.
Yes.
Doesn't mean that it's the better thing to do, or the easier thing to do, or whatever. And I think, you know, a lot of the times fear and anxiety will like tell you stories in your head, right? Like, and a lot of the times it's to protect you, right? Like, from pain of some kind, like the pain of rejection or failure or whatever. And so for me, it's just been really about listening to that and like actually sitting with those things that are uncomfortable, with the doubts and the fears. Because you have to give space to those uncomfortable feelings in order to keep going. In order to uncover, you know, what are the things that I, what am I actually afraid of? What are the things that, that I really care about, that I'm afraid of like losing or messing up, or, you know, whatever it is. And that's kind of, and that's freeing, you know, to not necessarily push those feelings away, but to learn how to live with it, you know, recognizing when I have those days of like, where I'm just not feeling super pumped, like it's okay to rest. Like, that's what I need right now. So yeah, there's definitely been and continues to be those moments. And so for me, it's been about being responsive and being able to sit with that and recognize it and give space to it so that I can release it and move forward.
What are some of the things that you've chosen to keep in your life?
Yeah. So I think, well, I will say, like, the thing that's been really helpful and has really taken a lot of intentional reflection and time and practice, you know, listening to myself, is kind of defining for myself what are the things that I value, and keeping myself grounded in those things, so that when I do encounter, you know, a difficult decision or a doubt or, you know, whatever, I can kind of move from a place of these core values. So some of the ones that I've defined for myself are, liberation, healing, connection, and possibility. And so leaning on one of those four values to make the next move, you know, just to like get unstuck or like just to take action. Cause at some point, like sometimes you just have to do something. You can't just like sit in that feeling forever. And so, you know, I might ask myself, okay, at this point, you know, what's the liberating thing to do, or what feels like there's the most possibility in, or what's going to connect me to something, either like other people or something, a higher power or whatever, like what's going to keep me connected. You know, what's going to be most healing for myself or for the people around me. So, that has been really helpful. Yeah. And just noticing in those moments, like, okay, I'm not going to worry about, you know, way down the line. Just what's the next right thing to do from here? You know, one little baby steps.
Yeah. Well, I love that because I think that really speaks to kind of the whole point of why we're here. Mm-hmm. In discernment, there's a lot of, I just need to do the next right thing. I don't want to get stuck. And mm-hmm. it's good to make a wrong choice sometimes if mm-hmm. it's like, well, I know that path isn't going to work.
Right. Yeah. And like, you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
So sometimes you have to experience something to get that wisdom.
Right.
That you didn't have before you experienced it, you know?
Right. Totally. Okay. So speaking of right and wrong choices, now that you can look back, do you feel like there was an obvious right choice?
I think that it was obvious that I wasn't in a place that I needed to be. Like, I think it's obvious to me now, that I needed to move into something different, transition into something different. I don't know that there was an obvious direction from there or an obvious like first step. And like I said, like, I think it took a lot of inner work and like, a lot of healing, honestly, to understand what was right for me. And so, you know, I think it's a lot of paying attention to what's still working and what's, you know, what new energy is coming up, desires, curiosities. A lot of it is really just paying attention and keeping up with yourself, you know?
Okay. So what about this? What is some advice you would give someone considering a similar path?
I think I would say number one, you don't have to do it alone. And so I think if it's something you're considering, you should talk to people that you trust about it. You should talk to people who have done it. You should talk to people that you want to support you. But it doesn't have to be something that you carry by yourself, necessarily. I think number two, and I've mentioned this before, you will need to do some like inner work, some like heavy lifting there, to kind of get to know yourself, you know, define your values. What is your identity outside of just work? Like, what do you want your life to look like? And these are kind of big questions. So I'm just kind of giving like starting points of like things to think about and reflect on. I think the other thing is it will be scary. And you'll have to make hard decisions and you can do brave things, you know? It's okay for both of the, for all those things to be true. It can be scary. It can be hard. It can be a risk. And it's still possible to do, you know?
You have been a real gem. I think you exemplify a lot of the ideals the show is trying to get at. You like get at, you know, the heart of choosing, of taking it slow, of, you know, putting things in their proper place and being intentional. And that's what I really hope listeners take away, not just from this episode, but from all of it. So thank you so much for being here and sharing all that with us.
Yeah, of course. You know, I speak from my own lived experience, my own knowledge. I am only an expert in what I know, you know, and I think we all are. So,
yeah. Now, is there anything that you didn't get to share that you'd like to?
Well, I think if you are listening to this and you're curious about connecting with me, or is that something you were going to?
Please, yeah.
Okay. I kind of offer two different types of services in terms of connection. So I do individual restorative coaching, which is essentially working with folks, especially like young professionals, on navigating these life transitions or career transitions, especially when you're dealing with things like imposter syndrome or burnout or anxiety, things that I have experience with and I have coached people on. So I offer that. I'm hoping to offer some retreats in the future, some nice group work. But that's TBD. I also do floral design. So I have a shop on, I have an online shop and I have an Etsy shop. It's called Little Cosmia. And I have been doing just sort of like individual bouquets for yourself or to send to friends and family. But I'm starting to do events and custom orders as well. So
nice.
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that actually.
Yes.
Well, as a buyer / big supporter, I sent one to my mom. They're great. They last a really long time and they're really beautiful. Sometimes they even smell good too, which you might not think dried flowers smell really great. They do.
Yeah. I mean, they're nice because you don't have to like watch them die. You don't have to change their water. Oh. You don't have to, you really don't have to do much. And they last a while. So
I'm going to put those links in the show notes. If you want to check out her work on Instagram or if you want to connect, there's a couple different ways to do that. So perfect. You can do that in the show notes.
Yeah. Yes. Please feel free. We can even do like a, not a consultation. That sounds so like, but you know, a little chat. We can just chat and see if it's a good fit. You know, if you want to work together, or if you just want to like connect, stay in touch. That's fine too.
Awesome. Alyssa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alyssa Santos is holistic, creative, and she's a healer. She coaches and she does floral design. So if you're interested in learning more about either of her projects, you can hit her up on Instagram. I left that in the show notes. You can also check out her website. That link is going to be in the show notes as well. Thanks again for listening and joining us on today's episode. If you liked what you heard, then don't be afraid to give me a shout out on whatever social media you are using. That really helps people to discover the show. Word of mouth is still probably the best. You can also subscribe. We're nearing the end of our season, so if you want to get the rest of those episodes and then learn about next season, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. And leave us a review if you got time. Reviews are also part of what helps new people find out about the show. If you want to get in touch with me, you can do so. I'm at the Gino Altamira on Twitter. You can email the show at adventurewithgino@gmail.com.